He is president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. He's Mark Shapiro, and Mark Shapiro joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. You know, we interviewed Ryan Borecki this morning, we started talking a bit about the pitching depth in the organization, or I was talking about it actually before. And I'm just wondering, you know, looking at what Nick Teppish did last night, I don't know if he's showing you guys enough to get another start, but I'm just kind of interested in where the pitching depth is in this organization right now with, you know, we have Sean Reed Foley, John Harris, Connor Green, and Ryan at AA. And are any of those four close to being able to make a contribution?
Well, I'm kind of a believer that if you have to ask that question, the answer is probably no.
Okay. Even if it's a reporter asking the question.
Well, definitely you, because you're a knowledgeable baseball reporter.
Stop it.
Some probably know, but no, the answer to the question is we're better than we were a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a better spot. You know, we've got guys, the starters you mentioned, there's, you know, Tim Mazza, who popped on the screen, and you, Stephen, and I talked about in spring training, and, you know, got off to a rough start, but has been just dominant over the last 6 to 8 weeks and really good. And so we've got some interesting guys that can contribute in the bullpen as well. You know, we're starting to build the depth. It's starting to move up the system a little bit as Ryan Borecki moves up, and you know, Sean Reed Foley and Connor Green, it's encouraging. We add Thomas Pannone to that mix, and it's encouraging to have, you know, four or five starters at AA. We feel are starting to settle in there and do well. When we have, you know, four or five prospect-type starters at AAA and they're all dominating the competition there, your answer will be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully three to five guys right behind them at AA and three to five guys right behind them at A-ball and, you know, a mixture of, you know, of effective potential bullpen guys as well. So it's a process. You can't cheat the process, and it takes time, you know, and consistency and executing and developing and but we're getting better, and we're better now.
Mark, is that ultimately the sign of when a guy is ready to advance, that he is dominating at that level? Or in this, you know, in this analytical age, are there other measurements that might be used to determine whether or not a player is ready?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's not just statistical domination. It's also someone who's demonstrated that they have the routines that are going to allow them to both adapt and adjust at the major league level as well as maintain consistency. So it's a lot of the things off the field, how they handle themselves professionally, what kind of teammates they are. You know, can they function in a setting where fear, worry, and doubt is going to enter in a lot more, where the pressures are a lot more intense, or they have to bear the scrutiny of Jeff Blair on a daily basis? You know, not many guys can withstand that.
Stop the flattery.
I think there's a lot of things we're looking at, but certainly when you see a guy is starting to demonstrate that, you know, some mastery, you know, of the competition at the level he's at, that's a good sign from a pure performance, you know, perspective.
Is it frustrating for you in the front office to, you know, and I'm not, look, Cesar Valdez, Nick Teppish, they are what they are.
Yeah.
But is it frustrating to run out pitchers like that from an organization's point of view?
You know, it's funny, almost every organization is going to be faced at doing that, you know, once or twice, you know, during a season. And that's why, you know, the minor league free agent process, or the waiver claim process, is such an important one to stay focused on, because it's not always going to happen organically just from the players you have. When you look up and there's three guys in the lineup you didn't plan to be there, and every pitcher pitches that night are not guys that were in your plans at the start of the season, you're probably a spot you don't want to be. And as long as you've got a plan to not have that be the long-term state and you're moving through it, That's fine. Some of those guys that you might mention in the same light, you might have said the same thing about a Dominic Leone during spring training. And, you know, Dominic has been, you know, one of the more dominant, one of the better guys out of the bullpen for us this year. So, I still think that there's opportunity to find guys both through minor league free agency as well as, in waiver claims.
There was a lot of talk going into last off season about, you guys wanting to get a little younger, more athletic, I guess almost more varied, I would call it, because I don't think you want to get younger necessarily for the sake of getting younger. You want to have a little more varied lineup. But have you seen anything this year, or let me rephrase that. Do you think you can still build a more varied athletic lineup for 2018 around guys like Russ Martin, Choi Tulowitzki, and Justin Smoak?
I mean, it's almost an unfair question because you probably know the answer to it before you ask it. I mean, I think you deal with the situation and circumstance you're in. I mean, certainly when you look at some of the better teams out there in the American League, Houston, New York, Cleveland, there are teams that have a diversity of ways to score, athleticism, a blend of youth and experienced players, a balanced team. I mean, again, that would be a long-term goal for us. We are where we are now. We have some of the best players in the game, you know, on our team, and we're a little skewed towards the veteran side instead of a mix. And when we do bring young players up, they're probably not, the right caliber of young players that we need to have here mixed in with veterans. So that's the goal, is to build that over time. Again, there's no cheating that process. That takes time. If there's a time that we reach where we feel like we can't continue to contend and win with the core we have, then we'll have to look at an alternate plan. But right now, we still feel like, although this year has been extremely disappointing to date, that we still have a good core of players, and if we can get healthy, have the capability with surrounding them with some other players, certainly, and being open to some trades. But we still feel like we can build from the core we've got.
I was going to ask you, given how the Red Sox and Yankees seem to have progressed this year, and I think we can, the Yankees maybe even are a little ahead of schedule, any rethinking of the notion of keeping the competitive window open, something you were very clear about wanting to do?
I mean, there's two reasons for that. And the first one is just what you'd see if you come down here on any given night. To be here last night, there's not a night that I don't sit watching the game, look out at our stands or walk around our concourses and just, wonder and absolute amazement and appreciation at just the number of fans who come out here. And that, I still feel like our jobs are to obsessively try to give those fans something to cheer about. And and the nights that we don't give them enough to cheer about and they don't go home happy, we need to be resolved to work harder to do that. That would lead to, answering your question, which is, I'm not sure what alternative you're giving me. What are you saying to just start over and start the franchise over? And because it is what it is. We've got the players we've got. We think they're great players. But there's no alternative. There's not an A or a B. Would you like to go with this younger group of players, or do you want to build around the players that are in place here right now? So we're going to do the best we can to build around the players we've got, and we happen to believe that there's both some championship caliber talent as well as people in that mix, and we're going to continue to work hard to surround them with other players that help them win.
Having said that, two of those veteran players, Troy Tulowitzki and Josh Donaldson, one is on the 60-day DL. The other, of course, is a year away from free agency. And, it kind of begs a couple of questions. One with Troy, he's got ankle injuries, had hip issues. Mark, at some point, do you need to have a discussion with him about shifting positions? And I don't even know if there's another position he can play, to be quite honest. And with Josh in particular, in some ways it seems like your hands are almost tied with him because it's a unique situation, the combination of his late career blooming, his age, his service time, his excellence at this age. At some point, do you have to have a discussion with him about an extension in the offseason? I know that's a long question, but certainly two very key players for this organization.
Yeah, Tulo, I mean, obviously we've got under contract for an extended period of time. And I think right now, and again, taking it step by step, the only focus is on getting him healthy and as physically prepared as possible to, you know, compete and be a championship caliber player, you know, next year.
Mm-hmm.
If at some point we feel like the best interest of him and this team is for him to play somewhere else, then but that as of yet has not even been something that we've thought about. So
okay.
We just need to get him healthy and then go from there. With JD, I mean, it's obviously going to be a consistent subject that both he and we have to deal with. I mean, I tend to feel like there's situations both, you know, from him and outside of his control that affect that decision for both him and us. The simplest answer to that is it's hard to imagine any scenario where we're a better team without him. He's a pretty special player. Now that he's gotten kind of healthy over the last couple of weeks, it's a good reminder for just how great he is offensively and defensively when he's healthy. So, you know, again, want JD here, appreciate who he is, the way he competes, how smart he is, how he prepares. But, you know, as far as the future for right now is next year, and then obviously we'll explore at the right times privately, you know, whether there's an mm-hmm. opportunity beyond that.
Now, you mentioned, you know, how you feel looking out at the full stadium and walking around the concourse and seeing a lot of fans at these games. That raises the question about the renovations at the Rogers Center. Now, we're led to believe that at some point this year, ownership will have a detailed plan in its hands about, you know, how soon renovations will start. I mean, all the logistics of it. But I'm just wondering, how far in the planning stages are you right now? And, you know, is there any tie-in between the refurbishing efforts, the renovation efforts, I should say, and the increase in ticket prices?
The increase in ticket prices are not tied to the renovation at all.
Okay.
Those are tied towards, you know, just, to be frank, just helping us, you know, compete against the teams in our division and helping us, you know, develop you know, progress our ticket prices in line with the industry and align with the other sports teams in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So never easy for anyone in these jobs to do. Never want any fans to feel like you're being disrespectful to them. But, you know, that's the business side, you know, of the job. The renovation is something that we both continue to talk to our fans about as well as continue to research. We do have general design themes and concepts that are developed, you know, largely from the insights we have gotten from our fans, as well as kind of doing looking at stadium, arena, ballpark trends around sports throughout the world. And so, yes, we've started to socialize those plans, you know, with ownership. And the hope would be that sometime over the off season we can start to move towards a commitment and a time frame. Obviously, it's going to be something that's staged over multiple years because we have to do the bulk of the work during just a four-month window when we're not playing.
No, that's – and again, I know I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here, which I seem to be good at. But you did say it is going to take multiple years. There will – and I know you can't obviously come out and say this categorically or – It would seem to be hard to play in a stadium that's under renovations, right? So the work will only be done in the off season, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I would answer that it's not a black and white answer.
Okay.
There's three pieces to that. Some work can be done during the season off-site and then installed when we're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you could have designated parts of the ballpark that for some period of time are closed while you're playing and you continue to work on. But three, the bulk of the large-scale renovations would have to be done, you know, November, December, January, and February. Yes, over a four-month period.
Do you think people understand or realize just how significant these renovations need to be? You know, because when I talk to fans and all that, you know, fans talk about, well, oh, good, I hope they open the concourses more, get different water fountains, things of that nature. But I don't know if fans... And maybe people in the media don't understand. Like, we're talking significant work here, aren't we? We're not just talking bells and whistles.
I sure hope so. I mean, I think, and your point's a great one, and it's something that, you know, when I, you know, after 18 years of only being on the baseball side, you know, and switching to the business side in Cleveland, one of the senior business executives was telling me there as I was stating, obviously, that we had the oldest scoreboard in baseball and we needed to get a new scoreboard. you know, he was telling me, besides the fact that it potentially could fail any day, he was saying, listen, no one's looking at that scoreboard next to an HD scoreboard, so they don't realize how bad it is. They just see what they see. And if you take that analogy and draw that into everything, you know, this stadium, as every stadium, still feels great when it's packed. Mm-hmm. But there is no compelling feature within this stadium that would cause people to want to be here, other than the environment and atmosphere when it's special, or the team winning, or just being a hardcore baseball fan. And I think ultimately what you'd like to do is design the coolest bar in Toronto that happens to be in Rogers Centre, to have the greatest family entertainment center, the best food and unique food products. And you know, you'd like to set all those experiences you know, within a ballpark, and then also have the pure baseball purist experience from base to base for the fans that still want to watch the game the same way they've always watched it and score the game. But a diversity of experiences targeted for, you know, the different, you know, parts of our fan base, and that provide people with a great cutting edge fan experience always starts with winning, but in every other aspect of the experience as well.